authoritarian control, unions have played an important role in stopping it. How do we do that? We stand shoulder to shoulder with our union siblings and with allies across the country. We do that when we join together and focus our attention directly on the corporations that enable fascism. Our unity across communities, organizations, and unions is our power. And whatever we do, we must do it together.
And they spoke of neighbors who had been lost to ICE violence. This is Rabbi Ariel Lekach Rosenberg.
I want to lift up the names of two neighbors, Victor Manuel Diaz, abducted from his workplace in Minnesota on January 6th, who died in ICE custody in Texas on January 14th. I want to lift up the name of Renee Macklin Good, queer poet, wife, parent, murdered in South Minneapolis by ICE on January 7th while observing an abduction in her neighborhood. May their memories be for blessing. May their families be comforted and surrounded in love.
The next day, another Minnesotan would be killed, Alex Jeffrey Preeti. For Democracy Now!, this is John Hamilton in Minneapolis.
Voices from Friday's massive protest and rally in Minnesota's unions and churches led an economic blackout to protest ICE. Special thanks to John Hamilton and Sam Alkoff and our special storm team here in New York. Tamari Astudio, Chirina Nadura, Ravi Karan, Mike Burke, Nicole Salazar, Mike DeFilippo, Safwat Nizal, Becca Staley, John Randolph, Cole Marksha, Julie Crosby, Gina Gester, Messiah Rhodes. I'll be speaking at the John Barrymore Center in Fort Lee.
KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
Tune into KBOO every third Saturday at 10 p.m. for Queery.
Dive into the spectrum of queer music as we explore artists across time and genre.
She's on my mind every hour of every day.
That's Queery every third Saturday at 10 p.m.
The things we could do, oh, it takes my breath away.
Here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And I lose control, think I follow home.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Solve, an environmental nonprofit bringing communities together in Oregon and Southwest Washington to clean and restore local neighborhoods and natural areas, and foster a culture of environmental care and community pride. More info on getting involved at solveoregon.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up in the KBOO Evening News, Portlanders protest ICE after federal agents kill a protester in Minneapolis.
Oregon community groups meet with the governor on how best to support local immigrant communities.
And Oregon unions join a new climate jobs coalition.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, January 26, 2026. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Dave Johnson. Hundreds of protesters demonstrated outside Portland's ICE facility on Saturday following the killing of a Minneapolis man by a federal officer. Demonstrators first gathered at Elizabeth Crothers Park in the afternoon and then marched to the ICE facility on Portland's South Waterfront. They're calling for an end to immigration enforcement and for Portland to revoke the permit for the ICE building. ICE officers tear gassed the crowd at least five times before 9 o'clock. They also shot flashbangs and pepper sprays at the crowd. Portland police arrested four people. Portland's protest was one among many nationwide in reaction to the killing of Alex Preeti in Minneapolis and the widespread cruelty of immigration agents across the U.S. Cell phone video show federal agents shooting Preeti at point-blank range after they disarmed him. Preddy was filming Customs and Border Patrol agents before being pushed, pepper sprayed, pinned on the street, and shot. Six agents surrounded him and shot him on the ground 10 times in 5 seconds. Preddy had a handgun that he was legally licensed to carry. Federal officials claim he approached Border Patrol officers and attacked them. Multiple videos of the death show that that is not true.
Oregon Governor Tina Kotek convened a roundtable of community leaders on Saturday to talk about how the spike in immigration enforcement has impacted Oregonians. Kotek emphasized her commitment to protecting immigration Oregonians and that the up-and-coming legislative session will be a big opportunity for the state to take action on the issue. Kotek held a press conference after the meeting. Here's an excerpt, starting with State Senator Janelle Solomon, Democrat from Hillsboro.
Immigration enforcement actions are bringing both physical and deep emotional trauma to our communities. As a mom and a grandma, it pains me to see the pain and fear in children's eyes. This is not the pain that they will quickly overcome. We see a wide-eyed five-year-old that is being taken and scared by ICE at a school, a place of safety, students thrown to the ground and pinned down by adults. In Hillsboro, students waiting in line at a Dutch Brothers are surrounded by masked men pointing guns. At Cornelius Elementary School, ICE agents have stood across the street and waved at parents and students during drop-off and pickup times. People in my district and across Oregon are genuinely scared. They are afraid to leave their homes to go to work or do errands like grocery shopping. They are afraid to take their children to school. They are fearful for friends and loved ones being disappeared by ICE. Our cities and our local community-based organizations are bearing the brunt of this fear and the outrage that our communities are experiencing. This is both an economic and a humanitarian crisis. I saw a sign on I-84 that read, "Your silence will not protect you." We cannot be silent. Our silence will not protect us. As we have seen in Minnesota, this escalation has made the worst fears come true. The violence, the terrorism that led the loss of a life and military action. But the people, law enforcement and leaders are not staying silent. This is a burden too large for just any one group to take on alone, which is why it is so important that we are here today in partnership with our community leaders. We need to support each other and support solutions that will have real impacts for Oregonians and are truly enforceable and do not lead to false hope and further harm.
My name is Ira Coyo Martinez. I am the proud son of immigrants, and I'm here on behalf of PECUN, Oregon's Farm Worker Union. On October 30th, 2025, Woodburn experienced the largest immigration raid in recent history. Over 35 neighbors were taken by ICE in a single day. This has caused a lot of fear in our communities ever since. Fear of going to school, fear of going to work, fear that a single knock on the door can change everything. Families have to prepare for separation as if it were inevitable. That is not normal, and it should never be accepted. But let me be clear, that fear does not define us. Immigrant Oregonians are the heart of this state. We are your neighbors, your caregivers, students and workers, elders and parents. Oregon is our home. Oregon today is facing a lot of challenges across the state. And we want to make sure that we do everything in our power to extend protections, hold the federal government accountable, pass the immigrant justice package, and use our state resources to support immigrant communities.
That was Ira Coyo Martinez from PECUN and State Senator Janine Solomon speaking at a press conference Saturday. Oregon's short legislative session begins February 2nd, and state Democrats have a supermajority in both chambers. Lawmakers announced plans for a suite of bills aimed at protecting immigrants against ICE last week. Those include a bill to allow Oregon to withhold payment to the federal government if the Trump administration illegally withholds funds from the state. Other bills would strengthen the state's anti-discrimination protection for immigrants, allow Oregonians to sue ICE agents for violating their rights, and limit masks by ICE and standardize identification for law enforcement. Lawmakers will also propose new guidelines for state agencies when they're pressed for data on Oregonians and requirements for schools and universities to tell parents if ICE comes to campus.
The fatal shooting of a Minneapolis protester by federal officers has bothered even longtime Trump supporters, like Republican members of Congress and even the National Rifle Association. But Trump continues to blame Democratic officials for the tense situation in Minnesota. Trump sent out two lengthy social media posts saying that Democrats have encouraged people to obstruct law enforcement operations. He also called on officials in Minnesota to turn over people who were in the U.S. illegally. Trump said over the weekend that the administration is reviewing everything, but he refused to say whether the officers who shot 37-year-old Alex Pretty acted appropriately. The White House did not answer questions about whether Trump personally watched videos of the shooting in Minnesota, which contradict the account offered by his administration. Trump did say, quote, "I don't like any shooting. I don't like it. But I don't like it when somebody goes into a protest and he's got a very powerful, fully loaded gun with two magazines loaded up with bullets also. That doesn't play good either." End quote. Last night, Trump said he would call on Congress to pass legislation banning so-called sanctuary cities, communities minimizing cooperation with federal immigration enforcement efforts. Trump's latest comes as outrage over the shooting has raised the possibility of a partial government shutdown in 1 week. As Democrats have promised to refuse additional funding immigration enforcement without institutional safeguards. Trump said that immigration enforcement officers will leave Minneapolis, quote, "at some point," but did not specify a time frame.
A federal judge has put the brakes on the U.S. Department of Agriculture cutting off some food assistance funding for Minnesota, but other Trump administration threats to the state program are still in play, Mike Moen reports.
Minnesota communities remain steadfast in protecting their neighbors from the controversial ICE operation. In the courts and administrative offices, a separate clash with federal officials continues, with the Trump administration wanting to hold up food assistance. A federal judge this month blocked the USDA from requiring the state to interview and recertify nearly 100,000 households receiving benefits through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. The agency threatened to cut off all administrative funding if that review failed. Rebecca Alvey reported on this story for Civil Eats, and she says it's on top of a separate move to freeze nearly $130 million in USDA funding to Minnesota.
Of course, a key part of that and a key concern for anti-hunger advocates is how that's going to impact the SNAP program, since SNAP is funded through USDA.
Agency leaders say the action is due to instances of high-profile fraud in the state. It also comes as the Trump administration escalates federal operations in Minnesota, including waves of armed federal immigration officers, with that move sparking local and national backlash. State officials say the increased ICE presence has hurt farming communities and food supply chains. Alvey says this holding pattern for Minnesota and its ability to distribute SNAP benefits might soon reach a critical point.
Benefits for January were already, going out, but sources told me that it's going to be really important to watch for early February to see if SNAP benefits do go out as planned.
The Minnesota Department of Children, Youth, and Families, which oversees SNAP, said in an email that it didn't have additional clarification on how the program will be impacted. On its website, the state agency says it's working with local partners to understand potential implications. On average, 440,000 Minnesotans rely on SNAP each month. There are already anti-fraud steps in place, like regular checks. USDA also has procedures to reach out to states with recurring errors to resolve the issue. This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection.
Deadly ICE encounters and a looming funding fight collide as Capitol Hill and communities nationwide brace for fallout from the White House immigration raids. Well, that story and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We're now in a very scary moment, and as an immigrant myself, I know other immigrants are fearful of becoming a target. So the balance between being fearful and finding courage, it goes day by day.
Francisco Segovia of Minnesota Latino group Copal says families are struggling to balance speaking out with staying safe and continuing to live their lives. ICE agents have killed two and injured another in shootings there so far this month. The supervisor of the FBI Minneapolis field office has resigned over what press reports say was the suppression of an investigation into the killing of Renee Good. The Justice Department has not commented. Separately, a federal judge has barred the department from altering or destroying evidence in the killing of a 37-year-old Minneapolis nurse Saturday. Bystander video shows Alex Preddy was disarmed and on the ground when he was shot and killed by a federal agent. He had a license to carry the pistol that was taken from his belt. The killings may cause a partial government shutdown. Senate Democrats say they'll block Homeland Security funding without investigations and an end to what they call ICE's unchecked power. Importantly, Republican Senators Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, and Tom Tillis of North Carolina may vote with them. Cassidy calls the shootings, quote, deeply disturbing. Tennessee Republican Representative Andy Ogles doubts they will stop the DHS budget.
The Democrats want to sabotage the federal government, sabotage ICE, and have another shutdown. I think that just helps us in the midterm. So this is a bluff.
Senate GOP aides say leadership plans to push ahead with a funding vote. Immigrants all over the country say they feel frightened and angry. Catalina Velasquez with Washington State's Immigrant Solidarity Network told hundreds rallying at a state capitol advocacy day that lawmakers need to protect their personal data and defend their civil and constitutional rights.
We must understand that immigrant solidarity measures are core to protecting a Washingtonian's health, data, and civil liberties, making this an agenda for every constituent, rural, urban, citizen and non-citizen.
Springfield, Ohio's Haitian community is waiting on a court decision that could determine whether their temporary protected status is extended or allowed to expire in early February. Marjorie Wentworth is a professor at Wittenberg University and a member of Springfield Neighbors United.
It's just terrifying that you can do everything right and then the country changes its mind and says, oh no, it's against the law for you to be here now. That's staggering to me.
The Haitians of Springfield briefly became a campaign issue when President Donald Trump accused them without evidence of killing and eating people's cats and dogs during a debate. The White House has revoked TPS for immigrants from several nations, including Somalia and Venezuela. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth look at the wave of community resistance to ICE enforcement. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Radio Zine. Tonight's weather will be cloudy and cold with an overnight low of 30 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy too, with a high of 49. Today in history, 1971, Look magazine included a gay couple from Minnesota, Jack Baker and Mike McConnell, as part of that week's cover article on the American family. They were the first same-sex couple in the U.S. to be granted a marriage license. The quote of the day is from American actor Paul Newman, born on this day in 1925. He said, quote, "If you don't have enemies, you don't have character."
Tribes are among those expressing condolences for the family of Alex Preddy, the Minnesota man shot and killed by federal agents over the weekend. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Tribes are among those expressing condolences to the family of 37-year-old Alex Peretti, who was fatally shot over the weekend by federal agents in Minneapolis. Tribes are also raising concerns for their citizens in the Twin Cities as the Trump administration's immigration actions continue in Minnesota. In a statement, the Mille Lacs Band offered condolences and said it's standing in solidarity with its band members and other Minneapolis residents. Tribal leaders are urging their members to carry tribal IDs and report any ICE interactions to the tribe as leaders meet with federal, state, and local officials. The Spirit Lake Nation, Crow Creek Sioux Tribe, Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate, Rosebud Sioux Tribe, and Standing Rock Sioux Tribe issued a joint statement expressing condolences and said they stand in solidarity with Minnesota communities. The tribes say recent federal actions in Minnesota include the taking of a Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate member, but they did not provide additional information. The tribes say leaders are in contact with federal agencies, and they're urging tribal citizens to prioritize safety. A teacher who was convicted of sexually abusing Hopi boys for nearly a decade was recently denied parole after the tribe and the U.S. Attorney for Arizona sent a letter opposing his release. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports.
John Boone was hired as a teacher in 1979 at a Hopi school run by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. In 1987, the FBI found photos and videotapes of 142 nude boys at his home, and Boone was sentenced to life in prison.
His name is still widely known on the reservation, even though it's been close to 40 years. We still continue to suffer to this day.
That's Hopi Chairman Lamar Kivema.
Unfortunately, we've lost some, either to suicide or to alcohol or substance abuse. Nothing will ever make up for what was done. It's an open wound that'll never go away.
U.S. Attorney Timothy Corchain has watched this case closely, even sending a letter to the U.S. Parole Commission in tandem with Hopi leadership.
And with the understanding that that federal special trust responsibility doesn't end at the sentencing.
Corchain also credits his tribal liaison, Kyoko Patterson, who is Navajo, for paying close attention.
She really stays on this for us.
The U.S. agreed to pay $13 million to 58 victims. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
For the first time in 40 years, a Native person is wearing the crown of Miss Rodeo, North Dakota. Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire has the story.
24-year-old Jalen Hicks of Dunn Center scored highest in the categories of horsemanship, appearance, and personality. She's competed twice before, but persevered and will now travel the rodeo circuit across the country. Hicks is one-quarter French-Canadian Chippewa of the Turtle Mountain Band. The last known Native rodeo queens were Janet Voigt in 1986 and Audrey Hall in 1954. Both were with the three affiliated tribes, Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara. Hicks says she's happy to continue this representation.
I love the fact that Native American culture has such a heavy influence on the Western industry, whether you want to look at the horsemanship, the jewelry, we see such a big influence, the leather work, the fringe we wear on our jackets, that's all from Native American culture.
Hicks was declared Miss Rodeo North Dakota last year and was formally coronated earlier this month. Besides educating people about rodeo culture and the Western industry, Hicks will also promote awareness of Angelman syndrome, a genetic condition that affects her niece, Sissy. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A new report describes Oregon as in the midst of two crises, climate change and wealth inequality. Climate Jobs Oregon is a new coalition of labor organizations. It says it is offering a roadmap for tackling those crises together through creating more well-paid union jobs. Isabel Charlet has more.
A new coalition of workers and labor organizations called Climate Jobs Oregon says it is focused on ensuring that the state's transition to a clean energy future centers working people. As part of its launch, the coalition has released a report outlining what it sees as two crises, climate change and rising unaffordability in the state. Oregon AFL-CIO President Graham Traynor, a member of the coalition, says these challenges can be tackled together by putting a union-backed workforce at the forefront.
Working class people have seen time and time again that
If climate action doesn't materially improve their economic conditions, that means higher wages, lower costs, and better job quality, it won't be nearly as durable and powerful as we need it to be.
The report calls for a massive build-out of clean energy infrastructure like wind and solar in order to meet the rising demand, but insists these new projects must come with guarantees for high-quality union careers. The report says the state is facing a severe inequality crisis as wages have not kept up with the rising cost of living. It also asserts the growing threat of climate change is making it worse and often hits low-income workers the hardest. Traynor says building the infrastructure to meet the state's rising energy demand could create more than 200,000 jobs, and argues that union jobs come with higher pay and better benefits.
Union apprenticeship programs offer the most comprehensive training with years of paid on-the-job and classroom training. We know that it makes a huge difference in work quality.
The coalition includes the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades Council, Sheet Metal Workers Local 16, and Iron Workers Local 29. Traynor adds the report is meant to serve as a roadmap and is building on Oregon's strong foundation of climate and labor action. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
PFAS, or forever chemical contamination, in North Carolina is widespread, especially in the Cape Fear River Basin. Conservation groups have filed a lawsuit over the Environmental Protection Agency's approval of an insecticide that falls in the PFAS class, claiming it was based on junk science. Catherine Carley has the details in North Carolina.
Conservation groups have filed a lawsuit challenging the Environmental Protection Agency's recent approval of a chemical which falls into the PFAS or forever chemical category. The insecticide isocycloserum was approved for use on lawns and golf courses, as well as numerous fruits, vegetables, and grains. Nathan Donnelly with the Center for Biological Diversity says former industry lobbyists now working for EPA are ignoring scientific consensus regarding the dangers to human health.
It really gets it how much influence the pesticide industry has over the approvals of these products in this country when you can get a forever pesticide approved.
PFAS chemicals have been detected in public drinking water systems and wells used by more than 3.5 million people statewide. EPA officials claim to find no health risks for the approved insecticide when used as directed. A provision denying people the right to sue chemical companies for non-disclosure of potential health hazards was recently removed from a federal funding bill. Chemical giants like Bayer and Syngenta have been lobbying for protection from what they call scientifically unsound lawsuits. The state attorney general's office is seeking compensation from more than a dozen manufacturers. Donnelly says it would be worrisome to exempt the entire industry from liability as more chemicals are approved.
If we take those people's ability to hold these companies to account away, it just kind of becomes the Wild West, and we're not going to have the protections in place that we as a people deserve and expect.
North Carolina has also joined several other states in challenging the EPA's proposed rollback of data collection regarding PFAS chemicals, claiming the agency is helping companies hide how much and what kinds of PFAS are in their products. For North Carolina News Service, I'm Catherine Carley.
Private jets and first-class passengers could be charged extra to fly. Several countries are eyeing new taxes on premium air travel. The revenue could fund climate solutions. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Most people rarely or never take a flight. But a small number of elite travelers fly a lot, often in business class or even on private jets, and they have an outsized impact on the climate.
It's clearly something where not everyone around the world is contributing to the pollution.
Frederic Roder is with the Global Solidarity Levies Task Force. It's an initiative that's developing new ways to raise money for climate adaptation projects, especially for efforts in low-income countries that suffer the most from climate change. She says one promising approach is for countries to put a tax on tickets or fuel for premium air travel.
What the initiative is targeting is really those flying the most, flying business class, first class private jets. So not the persons that might take a flight once a year to see their family or to go on vacation.
The task force helps coordinate a small but growing coalition of countries, including Spain, France, Kenya, and Nigeria, that have pledged to pursue the approach. And it's working to get other countries on board. Roder says it's a way to help fund climate solutions, by asking travelers generating the most climate warming pollution to pay a greater share of the costs. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, January 26, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Dave Johnson. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Farah Siddiqui, and Mike Moen. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Terrence Burns. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.com or kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Dave Johnson. As immigration enforcement actions intensify across the country, communities are responding with a growing wave of resistance from